All right, so let's go to Proverbs 26:17. Great counseling verse. We'll kind of depart here and go to just one other that kind of ties in with this one. One that, boy, I have learned the hard way. I bet a lot of you have as well. If you haven't, you probably will. But I have violated this more than I'd like to admit. Okay, 26:17. Somebody read that. Like one who takes a dog by the ears, right? I've seen someone grabbed. Like what happens when you grab a dog by both ears? You're going to get bit, okay, and what else? Once you're in, you're in. You're committed, right? So when you choose to go all into that situation and you grab a dog by the ears, especially maybe not nice dog. Okay, dogs in Israel are, yeah, I don't know. In this day and age, they weren't like, oh, it's fluffy. It's like, no. So you're meddling with something that you don't want a part of. You're committed, and you just don't pull an arm out, because when you pull an arm out, that arm's going to be bitten off, right? It's likened to he who passes by and meddles with strife not belonging to him. The idea is when you jump into a situation, when you see strife maybe or conflict or something that doesn't involve you and you jump in, what happens? You're committed, right? You're emotionally in. You pop off and you make a statement and you're, yeah, that guy is an idiot. Absolutely, right? Well, now you're in that situation. And then, you know, Joe Bob, who you just told that his friend was an idiot, is going to go tell his friend that you said he was an idiot. And now that friend's going to come back to you and say, Joe Bob said, you said that I said that I was an idiot or whatever, right? And now you're in that situation, okay? There are places where, in the right type of circles, where you need to jump in a situation. If you're helping bring maybe resolve to a situation that needs a third party, an outside perspective, where that isn't gossip or what have you. But there are also times where, man, you can see something and go, you know what, I need to stay out of that, okay? This is good, especially in counseling, because when you sit down with people, be it in a formal, like, counseling center type environment or just with a friend, and you hear them share, this is what's happening, and I can't believe this. Can you believe this person, or whatever the situation may be? What is your tendency in that situation? When you hear from someone that you know and care about, and they say this, what is your tendency? Yeah, you state your opinion. Based on what? What they just said. What's the problem with that situation? It's very one-sided, right? Turn to Proverbs 18:17. Read that. Right? Is that not true? Oh, yeah, I heard from that person. They stated their case. I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. Well, the problem is I heard from the husband. I didn't hear from the wife. Or I heard from this guy. I didn't hear from the friend. Or, you know, I heard from that middle school student, but don't know what his parents said about that issue. Right? And all of a sudden, you've weighed in. You've given judgment. And you've said, so be it according to Mike. And you're like, oh, wait a second. There's a whole other side to this story. And you painted yourself in a really kind light. And now that I'm hearing from this other party, maybe what you said was not quite as accurate as I heard it, or maybe you positioned yourself in a way that looks a whole lot better than you are. So counseling nugget here is be careful when you weigh in and what situations you put yourself in. When you do, and you say, okay, I'm all in. I got both ears, right? I'm a part of this solution side of this situation. When you do that, make sure you hear both sides of the story and withhold judgment as long as possible, right? So you can listen to, you know, someone who's upset, and you can empathize with them and say, man, I'm sorry. I'm sure that's really painful. That's difficult. I'm so sorry that you're in that situation, without saying, you know what you need to do? That person is an idiot, or that situation's horrible, or you should tell your boss to, you know, whatever, right? Just be careful with that until you've heard all perspectives, okay? And I've done that again so many times where the situation seems so clear and so like that's clearly what's happening, and then all of a sudden you hear the other side and go, doggone it. Now I've got to undo the damage that I just did. I made it worse because I popped off at my mouth, okay? And again, persisters, black, white, right, wrong, highly opinionated people, we're going to get caught in this. Harmonizers, same way. Like, you just feel so deeply about this person, and you care so much about their feelings and where they're at and the amount of pain that they're in. You want to, you know, and then you go, oh, wait a second. That person's in pain too, or gosh, that's the rest of the story. Okay, so just be aware. Okay, so again, there are times in life you need to grab the dog by both ears. You've got to enter in. That doesn't mean avoid conflict. That doesn't mean that conflict's bad. But there are times that it's appropriate for us to get in, and there's times for us to say, you know what? You all need to deal with it, right? And often in our house, that's how it happens. One kid comes to us and says, my sister, blah, 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 blah. Have you talked to your sister about that?
Well, no.
Well, you need to go talk to your sister. You guys go talk. You go work it out, right? You're grown 8-year-olds. Figure it out, right? You're very mature for an 8-year-old. And then, you know, if that doesn't work, then we intervene. But we try not to play the referee card all the time. So we intervene at the last moments when it's appropriate. So, okay? Thoughts on that? Any of you done as I have done in that area? Dave, I see you nodding.
Mm-hmm. None of them realizing that he beat my mom for 12 years. Hmm. Like, but everybody got away from my mom because Tavi
right.
Really well, but there's
right.
Two sides to every story, and you can't just
blame yeah.
The one, you know.
Yeah.
Jaren Payne, and they're gonna say what they're gonna say.
Yep. Yeah, really good lesson in a very difficult situation. And divorces are the worst, right? Because that's how it all, that's the reason people are generally telling you what's happened is why. What are they looking for? Sympathy, sometimes. I want allies. I want people on my side because I want you not on their side, right? So yeah, so your dad shares or your stepdad shares the story in this fashion. So it looks like, oh, wow. I mean, fix your halo just a little. It's all, you know, and all of a sudden you realize, well, wait a second. You know, you've got issues on your side too. So I've watched in our office, you guys know Dave Obwald. He does this really, really well. I've watched him as a really good counselor and just a guy that's got God-given pastoral skills. He is really good at this. I've learned a lot from listening to him. I'll walk into his office sometimes and be like, rah! You know, about some situation. And Dave will say, listen, okay. Maybe this and maybe that, and I'm like, oh, okay, yeah. I'm glad I didn't say to that guy what I just said to you then, right? So, there are people that I've seen that do this really, really well, and as a result, you know, have less wounds physically. They have less bites on their arms from dogs because of not doing stupid. So, okay, so you will use that often in life, right? Whether it's formally in a counseling center or just in life, you're gonna need to know that. All right, so tuck it away. And learn the lessons, unlike I did. I helped pay your dumb tax on that one, so you're welcome. Yes, ma'am.
So what do you do when one of your friends talks to you about your other friend?
Yeah. Well, here's the line for me, okay? Especially with gals, right? Just, I think women just tend to be a little bit more prone to the sin of gossip maybe than guys do. Not that guys don't, but that maybe as you put it on a balanced scale. The line for me of where is what's gossip and what is healthy conflict is, are you a part of the solution or not? So if your role in hearing your friends say, listen, this is what happened, if you're a part of, okay, I hear you, you care about this person, I care about both of you, I'm going to be a part of this to help fix this situation, then that's not gossip. That's healthy conflict resolution. Now, they need to know, listen, when you come to me, here's what I'm going to do with that information. Number one, biblically, I'm going to tell you to go to the source. You're going to go have this conversation with that person, okay? And I'm going to give you a deadline to do that. So have you told me, have you told them what you're telling me? Oh, no? Okay, you need to go have that conversation because you're frustrated enough to tell me, but you won't tell them. So biblically, that's not okay. So you say, you need to go have that. And then you ask them, have you done that yet? No? Okay, how about I arrange the meeting and I'll get the three of us in a room so you can tell her what you said about her or about the situation or whatever it may be. And if you do that and handle it biblically, you're going to get a whole lot less people saying, blah, they just feel the freedom to vent. People feel the freedom to vent because no one's going to do anything about it. They go, oh yeah, that sucks. Because it takes time, it takes energy, it's a pain, right? So but that's biblically where I've seen that resolve best, and I've got friends that do that well, and I know when I communicate that to them, I better be committed to the solution side of things because they're going to make me, because they care about me, finish that conversation. So that's been my kind of line. So, yeah.
Just with what you said a second ago when you went and talked to Dave,
mm-hmm.
and he helped you out, that sort of thing, but what you just said, you said go right to the source.
Yep.
So how do you...
Like I said, I've blown this more than once, right? So... There are times that I need to process, right? And that's a little bit different than like, it's not a, let me tell you what this guy in details did. It's like, I'm dealing with a situation. I'm super frustrated. I'm not naming names. I'm not throwing someone under the bus. It's, I've got to go deal with this and I'm emotionally charged. I need some feedback. This is what I'm planning on saying. And all of a sudden I walk out of Dave's office realizing, ooh, that's not what I should have said. So there's a bit of a difference, and I know in a guy like Dave, he's going to push me to have that conversation. And he's going to ask me a week later and say, how did it go? What did you say? What resolution took place? Because he values healthy conflict resolution. So there's a bit of a difference in my mind's eye. If you're gathering information so that you can go have the conversation, that's healthy. Now, that group of people needs to be extremely small let me tell all of you, right, and get one-on-one advice from every one of you, right? It's, who are the trusted people that I know that are really good at this, that I need some insight from? And they don't need to know names. They don't need to know certain details, right? So there's times when I think that's appropriate, but that's a fine line too. So, and I've screwed that up as well, right? And for the same reasons that everyone else does it, I've done it. So I can vent, so I can, right? And that's not necessarily okay. It's not okay. So let's make it black and white, not gray. It's not okay to, yeah. So does that make sense? So that's kind of how I look at it. And again, I'm expecting that person to be on the solution side with me, and I'm going to communicate that to folks that can. So does that make sense? So that was a very helpful line for me with the kind of the gossip solution side. Like if you're a part of a solution of a problem, that's healthy conflict resolution. If you're listening to someone just grumble, you know, that's no bueno. So, and I promise you, if you handle one of them right, you'll get the reputation quickly of, wow, they're gonna hold my feet to the fire on this, and they're gonna make me deal with this. You're gonna get a lot less, right? So, now, conflict resolution is messy, and it takes a ton of time, and that's why people don't do it. It's good, and the benefit is always healthy, long-term, but boy, it is not a simple process, and that's why people don't want to go through it. So, okay. So, for more on that, honestly, Dave Aubald is the best I know. So, if you guys ever need someone that's got sound, biblical, with the right pastoral heart, Dave is the best. So, cool. All right, Genesis, shall we? All right. On that note, let's pray. We're going to watch conflict resolution this morning. I think we'll see how fast we go, but. Should be good. Let me pray for us, and then we'll dive back in. God, I'm grateful for your word. I'm grateful for what you have left us with, that we may know you. As I think about, God, our abilities and desires to interact with people and how often that goes awry and how we desire to rightly handle your word and people and conflict. Thank you, God, just for the guideposts in our life that help us to figure out how to do that. Thank you for those that have gone before us that are wiser than us, like Dave and others that have taught me. Just pray, Father, that we would be men and women that would be of your book and that we would handle things appropriately and right. So God, teach us this morning from Jacob and Esau and their relationship and their dysfunction and the work that you have done in both of these guys' lives. And God, just teach us from your word this morning, we pray. In Christ's name, amen. All right, so we finished up last week with Jacob and a bunch of kids, right? So he has had now 13 kids, right? You guys remember that? From four different women, right? You're going to need to memorize those, by the way. So all the concubines and all the children from each one in order. Okay. You will need to know the kids, okay? They're fairly important because they become the 12 tribes of Israel. So I would remember those, okay? So they will be important throughout the rest of the scriptures, okay? So be aware of those at least. And we'll go over them pretty frequently. So I think you'll, by the time you finish up our stories, you'll know them pretty well, okay? So we've got all of our kids. We've got Jacob, and that's fled to Paddan Aram. Okay, by the way, I was studying this morning. I had one of those like, oh, dang it. I think based on what I was looking at, I told you guys that Paddan Aram was in the area of Ur and Sumer. It appears that, and I think there's a couple different options, Paddan Aram could be in Haran. You guys remember Abraham left Ur, went northwest to Haran, and then back down to the Promised Land. It looks like when he left, the family migrated with them. Terah is there, Abraham's dad. He dies, then Abraham goes in the land. The family, or the extended family, now stays there. Okay. So when we talk about Eliezer going back to Paddan Aram to get a wife for Isaac, probably in the area of Haran. It could be Ur. There's a couple different views on that. There's a northern and a southern view or whatever. So some people say it's up north. Some people say it's down south. But it looks like, based on some inferences in the text, that when Jacob flees to go away from Esau, Rebekah says, get out of town, get out of Dodge. They went up to Haran. Okay, that area is Paddan Aram. That's where Laban and his family would have lived. So that's where we're at currently. Okay, so we're going to see they're going to cross the Euphrates River, and as soon as they get on the other side of the Euphrates, they're like looking at the Promised Land, which tells me geographically that's where it is. Okay, so that's, I changed my opinion on that. So I just removed all heresy from last week. So there's probably more that I don't know about, but that's at least what I was aware of.
In Genesis 29, it says when he asked the shepherds, he asked where they're from, they said they're from Haran.
Right.
But they
Good call. So I saw that one, and there was, actually, I didn't see that one. I saw another one that made the reference of, yeah, crossing the Euphrates, and yeah, so I think it's up north. So go have fun studying that. So, but that was my, like, oh, dang it. I told them wrong moment, okay? Yeah, jerk face, how could you? All right, so where are we? Jacob's dream, 30, 31? Did we finish 31? 30, 25. Yeah, there you go. Okay, so that's all the kids, okay? So now we're going to get into this relationship between Jacob and Laban, okay? Now, Jacob's chief issue is what? I mean, if you had to put words to it, what does God need to work out of him? Trickery, right? He is the deceiver. He is the trickster. Sorry. Why don't you figure out how to get all this stuff off. So Laban's going to be the paddle, okay? And the next 20 years is going to be his chalkboard, okay? And God is going to use Laban to work out of Jacob what needs to be worked out of Jacob. So that's the purpose. That is why God has him here in a lot of ways. Now, we're going to see Jacob grow up a ton. He is going to mature. We're going to see some really neat things in him. We're going to see his character rise to the surface. So God has put him in a place of difficulty, in a place of that's strange and new, and he's going to work out of Jacob what he needs to, okay? And that's going to begin now at the hand of Laban in verse 25. So let's pick up in 30, 25, and let's read that. All right, so what's he asking now? What's Jacob want? Go home, right? I need to go back to Canaan, okay? Look at chapter 31, verse 41. How long has he been there? 20 years, okay? And that's, Jacob or Dave, one of you guys asked last week about the timeline. These 20 years I have served you in your house. I served you 14 years. For your two daughters, okay, so 7 apiece, and 6 years for your flock. Okay, so he says another 6 years to accumulate his goats and his sheep and his herds, and we'll get to that in a minute. But he's now been there 20 years. So we're talking about a guy that left later on in his teens, early 20s, something like that. He's 40-ish, maybe around in that neighborhood. He's got a full family, right? He's got 13 kids, 12 at this point. He hasn't had Benjamin, and he's going to go home. So he's ready to leave, okay? It's been good with Laban for the most part. Kinda. It hasn't gotten bad, but it hasn't been great. So we'll see that relationship play out. So he's asking to go home, okay? And he says now, verse 26, give me my wives, okay, both of them, and my children from whom I have served you, and let me depart. For you yourself know the service which I've rendered you. And we'll hear more about this service. We find out that Jacob has been amazing. This guy has been a faithful servant to Laban for now 20 years, okay? Now, Laban's a smart guy, so here's what he says. 27. Back to 30. 30, 27. Okay, so he says, hey, look, my life's been better for the last 20 years because you've been here. So I'd prefer my lucky rabbit's foot not leave. So why don't you stay? Now, what do you notice in Laban's response? Anything buggy about that? Okay, he's been blessed, certainly. Okay, specifically in Laban's words.
Learned by divination.
Yeah, what does that mean? Learned by divination that the Lord has blessed me. What does that sound like? That's called syncretism. Does Laban know God? Seems like it. He knows the Lord. But divination is not a practice of Jewish people. That is worship of other gods. So he's divining, and I'm reading into this a little bit based on his language. And we don't see it in the text per se. We are going to see that he's very clearly a guy that worships idols later. Okay, so he's an idol worshiper, and he's a follower of God. Okay, does that sound like an odd thing? Unfortunately, man, it's a struggle of us today. You know, we love God, but we love other things, and we try to fit those together in our life and make them work where they don't work, right? Laban's that guy. So he's shrewd, he's wise, he knows God, but he's also like, kind of like Mars Hill. I don't want to offend any other gods, so I'll just worship all of them, okay? So that's Laban. So we're going to see that kind of play out in his life. So he says, hey, name me your wages and I will give it. So 28, Laban says, blank check, what do you want? Like, we've heard this story before, right? Anything you want, Jacob, I'll give it to you. Well, we're going to find out. Jacob's heard this tune more than once, and we're going to find out that he's not real sure about Laban's words, about how accurate what he says is, okay? So he says in verse 29, you yourself know how I have served you and how your cattle have fared with me. So he basically repeats exactly what Laban already knows. You had little before I came, now you have much. The Lord has blessed whatever I turn, but now, when shall I provide for my own household also? Laban, I spent 20 years making you rich, okay? It's time for me to leave. Let me take my wives, my kids, and that's all I have. And he's going to ask for one other thing, but I need to go provide for my house. 31, Laban says, okay, what shall I give you? Okay, so he's basically saying, all right, I see that you're going to leave. You shall not give me anything, Jacob says. If you will do this one thing for me, I will again pasture and keep your flock. So this is the one request from Jacob in verse 32. Okay, so what does he ask for? Give me the spotted and the speckled sheep and goats, okay? There's been a lot of debate as to why he asks for this. We'll get to that in a second, okay? At the end of the day, that's what God told him. God appeared to him in a dream and said, number one, leave, go home, okay? It's time for you to go. Secondly, you're going to go home with spotted and speckled sheep. So he says, Laban, give me the spotted and speckled sheep. So it's not magic. I mean, there's been a ton of commentary on, you know, Punnett squares and, you know, how animals breed. And you're like, God revealed to him in a dream that that's what he's going home with. So he said, okay, Laban, I need to leave and I need these sheep because that's what God told me. Okay, so it's really simple. Okay, we'll get to that in a second. Okay, so he says, let me pass through. Let me take these. Those will be my wages. Okay, so verse 33. My honesty will answer for me when you come concerning my wages. Everyone that is not spotted and speckled among the goats and the blacks of the land is found with me will be considered stolen. So it's very simple. If they're solid, Laban, they're yours. If they're spotted and speckled, they're mine. Very simple. If you see a solid lamb or sheep or whatever, they're yours. I stole them. So it's very simple. Okay. Laban says, great. Let it be according to your word. Now, Laban's dirty. Watch what he does in 33. So again, what does Jacob ask for? Spotted and speckled. Now, what would be your assumption? All right, take away biology and Punnett squares and all the stuff that you know. If you're going to breed spotted and speckled lambs, what would you assume you would need? A spotted male and a spotted female that they would breed, right? That would be the idea. They don't know about recessive genes and all this other stuff, okay? Read 33. 5. When I say 33, you think 35.
Everyone that had white on it, and every lamb that was black, and put them in charge of the son.
Keep going.
And he set a distance of 3 days' journey between himself and Jacob pastored the rest of the
So what does he do? Does it sound familiar? You want to marry my daughter? Better to give her to her than better for me to give her to you than somebody else. You want the spotted and speckled sheep? Absolutely, no problem. Hey, sons, take the females, put them over there. Take the males, put them over there, and let's go 3 days away from Jacob. Now let's see if they can interbreed. Jacob, what are you left with? Nothing. That's the idea. Laban's a punk, so he agrees to it, but he's got his fingers crossed behind his back. Great, no problem. So you see what Laban's doing? He's going to out Jacob, okay? So he's playing dirty, okay? He's hasn't necessarily committed anything that he's now uncommitted to, but he is he's being dirty, okay? So he does that. His sons take the rest of the flock that obviously Jacob wanted. And in 37 and following, Jacob does this crazy thing, okay? He takes fresh rods of poplar and almond, peels the white stripes in them, exposes the white in, with the rods, and basically he sets up in this place where the sheep and the goats are going to mate, spotted and speckled things for them to look at while they breed, okay? Okay, this is biology 2,000 years ago. So the idea was, if you see these things while you're mating, then that's what the baby's going to look like when it comes out. That at least is as best as we can tell what he's doing. So he's leaning on a shovel and, you know, let me say it like this. He's praying that God would work out a situation, and he's doing everything in his power to make sure the situation works out the way he does, okay? He is praying like a Calvinist and working like an Arminian, okay? He's being a faithful steward and saying, God, I'm going to do everything in my power to make sure I leave here with spotted and speckled goats, because that's what you told me, and we're going to assume that he's trusting God on the backside of this, because we're going to see him here in a couple chapters pray like he's never prayed before, okay? So that's the idea. So 37 and following is all about how they're going to breed together, okay? So that was his routine and how he would basically increase his chances or his hopes, at least, of them coming out correctly, okay?
So wait, did he know that Laban did that? Because you look at the sheep, and then all of a sudden, all the ones he wanted were gone.
Yeah, yeah. So that had been very apparent. Yeah, so he realizes. So he's like, well, what do I do? I'm his employee. So, and I want both of his daughters, and I want to leave in peace. So, and they're not going to leave in peace after it's all said and done. So that's the idea. So yeah, he would have known. So yeah, he forgot to put that clause in the contract. So where's Melissa when you need her to make sure these contracts are foolproof? So there you go. That's the issue. Okay. But 43, watch what happens. Last verse of chapter 32. So God is blessing he and Laban both. So it's working out. Okay. So at the end of the day, God is still blessing him. Okay. Now 31, things are going to start going awry. Okay. Jacob heard 31:1 the words of Laban's son, saying, "Jacob has taken away all that was our father's, and from what belonged to our father, and he has made all of his wealth." So what is the accusation that Laban's sons lobby against Jacob? Where did you get all your stuff from? Us, right? Our family. Jacob's job has been to work for Laban, right? So all the sheep, all the goats, all the stuff is Laban's. And they made an agreement, I want this portion when I leave. And they're basically saying, look, you're just ripping off our father, right? Jerk, they're the kids. These are the bloodline. Jacob is not, right? He's some foreigner from, you know, the west side of the Jordan coming in and taking now our father's stuff. And he realizes in verse 2, uh-oh, the scale is just tipped. Read that. Okay, so something has changed in the relationship. So it was kind enough. We're going to see as we read into this a little bit more, and Jacob explains this 20-year history with he and Laban. It wasn't great, but something happened where he said, okay, it's time to go. We can no longer live together. It is a bad deal, okay? Lord said to Jacob, return to your land of your fathers and to your relatives, and I will be with you, okay? So he calls Rachel and Leah and has a conversation with them. And in 5 and following, he walks through what God revealed to him in a dream. And this stuff, in terms of chronology, I think happened before Jacob does all this, which is why he does what he does with Laban in chapter 30, okay? So he says to them, look, verse 5, your dad's attitude towards me is no bueno. I've served your father with all my strength. Verse 6, your father has cheated me, verse 7, and my wages 10 times. However, God did not allow him to hurt me. Okay, so a little bit of insight there. We'll cover that more in a minute. Okay, thus he spoke to me, the spot on speckled wages, and you see all this stuff. And then he says to them, verse 11, again, he's recounting his story to his wives that he's trying to get ready to leave. And he tells them about this encounter he has in verse 11. Okay, pick up there and read that. So he's telling his wives, I met the angel of the Lord. Now, how does God identify himself, by the way, in verse 13 to Jacob? The God of where? Bethel. Why is that so important? Now, mind you, this is 20 years after he's left Canaan. Why is Bethel important to Jacob? It's where he had the dream. What does Bethel mean? House of God. And what did Jacob say at Bethel? He woke up from this, you know, after the Led Zeppelin song, right, Stairway to Heaven, and he said, God, if you take care of me and you hook me up and you give me my Ferrari and my house in Vail and my jet skis and all my stuff, then I will serve you. Now, how is he about to leave? Blessed, right? He's going to leave super blessed. So God's like, okay, I'll play your game. And he reminds him, I'm the God of Bethel. I'm the God that was there when you were alone. We have not seen Jacob alone in 20 years, and God broke him there, and he's about to break him again. So he reminds him, look, I was there with you. I remember that. I've been with you ever since. It is time to go, and it's time to leave this land. So he's basically saying, God said leave. God showed me this dream. That's why I asked Laban for these things. And he's convincing his wives, listen, it's time to go. We need to take our chitlins. We need to put them in the wagon, and we need to roll. Okay? So Rachel and Leah, their response in verse 14 is, do we have any portion or inheritance in our father's house? Not a good response. They're like, great, let's go. Dad does not care about us. Are we not reckoned by him as foreigners? For he has sold us and has entirely consumed our purchase price. That dowry that you gave when you came, which probably wasn't a whole lot, is gone. Okay, he spent it. He went down to Table Mountain and blew it. He's treating us like foreigners, like we're not even his daughters. This is not a healthy situation. So they're basically saying, we're in. Okay, Dad has not been real good to us. So, we see that. Okay, verse 16, surely all the wealth which God has taken away from our father belongs to us and our children. Now then, do whatever God has said to you. Okay, so if God said leave, then let's go. So you're seeing at least some faith amongst his wives, and they're ready to roll. Okay, so Jacob gets up, puts his chitlins in, drove away, verse 18, his livestock, his property, all that he had gathered, and he leaves Padan Aram to go to the land of Canaan, verse 18, the land of his father. Okay. 19, when Laban had gone to shear his flock, Rachel stole the household idols that were her father's. So what do you, again, read into that for me. What's going on in Laban's home? He's got idols in his home, okay? Rachel is about to leave home, go on a very difficult journey. So what does she take with her? Why did she choose to get this? Why did she grab Dad's idol? This isn't to sell at the flea market. Think about it. You're leaving home, difficult journey. You're Sarah. You're leaving home and Ur, and you're going to some new land. What are you going to take with you? Security. This is her whoobie. This is her binky, right? What does that tell you about Rachel's faith? Man, she's in process, right? So she knows God because she's kind of a family that's a part of that, but she's watched Dad worship God and worship idols. So when push comes to shove and God has kind of put me in difficult situations. She grabs that which makes her most comfortable. That's what she gravitates towards. So she gets the idols that she's used to and that she grows up with, okay? So she leaves with that, and that's going to cause a problem here in a couple more verses, okay? Now, the problem is verse 20. This is how Jacob leaves.
He fled with all that he had, and he arose and crossed the Euphrates River
and set his face toward the hill country of Gilead.
Okay, so there's the verse that caused me to panic this morning. Okay, so as you come out of Haran, you cross over the Euphrates going south. In front of you is the land of Gilead. Okay, so that is basically all of the land on the east side of the Jordan. That's the area. Moab, Edom, okay, all the cities on the east side of the Jordan, outside of the promised land, that's Gilead or Gilead, okay? So that's where they're headed, okay? So he deceives Laban, right? He talked to him about going, but he basically leaves in the middle of the night. He flees and doesn't say, hey, today's the day, okay? We're going, we're packing the car. Everyone goes to bed. He's like, okay, get in the station wagon. We're leaving now. So he leaves under the cover of darkness, okay? 22, Laban finds out. What do you think Laban's about to do? He ain't going to stand for that, right? So he takes off after him, okay? He had a distance of a 7 days journey, and he overtook him in the hill country of Gilead. So he meets them in the mountains outside of the promised land. So at this point, they're basically halfway between the Jordan, halfway in between the Sea of Galilee and the Dead Sea, just on the east side of the Jordan. That's where Laban catches them, okay? So they've been a seven-day journey to get there. And God comes to Laban. Okay, you can imagine how bad this is when God has to say this to Laban in verse 24. Why would God have to say that to Laban? Don't speak to him either good or bad. What do you think Laban's intentions are right now? Is he happy? No, he's ticked, right? So basically God's saying, don't touch him. He's mine, don't touch him, okay? Laban catches up with Jacob, okay? Verse 26, he says, what have you done by deceiving me in carrying away my daughters like captives of the sword, right? And that's basically what it looks like to Laban. You left under the cover of night. You just took them off like they were some type of spoils of victory from a battle. You just left. Why did you flee secretly and deceive me and did not tell me that I might have sent you away with joy and with songs, with timbrel and with lyre, right? So Laban says, hey, we would have had a party. We would have celebrated your leaving. You're like, really? Really, Laban, that's what you would have done? So you can see, like, he's just, man, it's coming out of his ears right now. He's just full of it, right? So, he's proven a point of saying, listen, Jacob, you lied to me. You deceived me. You Jacobed me. You left in a way that you shouldn't have. And I would have thrown you a party otherwise, which we all know is wrong. But and Jacob would have gotten the bill for it later, right? Okay, here's party rentals, you know, here's for the tables. But that's not how it went down, right? You did not allow me to kiss my sons and my daughters. Now you have done foolishly. Now how should Jacob have left? What should Jacob have done? Why? Who told him to go home? God! Laban, God told me to go. I have to go. I didn't just have some wild hair and think, you know what? I'm going to go back to Canaan tomorrow, just because, right? No, God told me in a dream to get the spotted and the speckled sheep and to go back to the promised land. That'd have been a better way to do it. Now, Laban still probably would have been a chump, but the way of integrity, the way of trust, the way of God, I believe you, and I'm not going to be fearful of Laban, would have been, here's what's going on, I'm going home. Now, we're going to find out why Jacob made that decision right here, okay? So, he gets punked, and in verse 29, here's where you see the true intentions of Laban come out. This is what he says to Jacob. What does that mean? It's in my power to do you harm. But God spoke to me last night. Maybe. Jacob, tell me what you're thinking.
Well, I don't think he fears God at all. I think he's like, I could destroy you.
I'd destroy you in a second.
Not
only could I, but I came with the intentions to do that, and God had to physically stop me and reveal to me in a dream saying, don't touch him. Like, I was going to throw you a party. Two verses later, he's like, oh, I was actually going to kill you. Or at least do you harm, right? Maybe just chop off a finger. Maybe just your pinky. But, right? But that's the idea. So you understand the relationship and where it's at. This is not healthy. And Jacob is leaving fearful for his life. So no wonder he left at night, right? So he's got a little bit of Gideon in him, right? Like, I'll take down my father's altars, but I'm not going to do it at high noon. I'll do it in the middle of the night. Okay, we'll get there in Judges. But he's fleeing because he's scared.
Didn't God tell him to not say anything good or bad? So isn't this like going against what God asked him?
He says say, but he says I have the ability to do you harm. So whether that was like physical or I'm taking all my stuff back and my daughters and, you know, you can rot in the desert for all I care. Good luck getting home. Here's a glass of water. I don't know, but he clearly did not come with the intention of blessing. God would not have stopped him had his intention been, oh yeah, leave him with a victory song or whatever. His intentions are wrong, and God, I think, has to put the e-brake on Laban's life. Okay, so God steps in when Jacob doesn't even ask for it. Okay. Now listen to this is what's motivating Jacob to act the way he does. It's not a surprise, but it's important to point out. 31. Oh, I'm sorry. Read 30 as well. This is what Laban is ticked off about in addition to everything else.
And now you have gone away because you long greatly for your father's house. But why did you steal my God?
So he kind of punks him a little bit, right? Mama's boy, you're going back home, right? Right. You're just homesick. But what else does he do? You stole my household gods, and I'm mad about that as well. Okay, so someone took them. And Jacob doesn't know anything about this at this point. Okay, now look at his answer in verse 31. This is what motivates Jacob to act.
Jacob answered to Laban, because I was afraid, for I thought that you would take your daughter to me by force.
Because I was afraid. Afraid of what? Or afraid of who? Laban. Okay, I was afraid of you and how you would respond. Okay, this is important. Jacob paints for himself the worst case scenario of what could happen, right? Because I fear Laban, because I don't trust him, because I'm not sure about his walk with God and what he could do, the worst thing that can happen is this. So that's the reality that I'm living in, and I'm going to make my decisions based on the hypothetical possibility of Laban acting like this. So he does, okay? That is always, always, always a horrible way to make decisions, and we do it all the time. Right? I am so guilty of that. You play out a situation in your head. Well, man, if I say this and this is going to happen and my boss is going to respond like that, or if I tell my sister this, or if I tell my wife or whatever, this is how this is going to play out. And if this is how it could be, then that's how I'm going to base my decision, and I'm either going to do or not do based on that. And you see Jacob do it right here. I was afraid of you. And God said, we'll deal with that in a second. But because you were afraid of Jacob, or because Jacob, you were afraid of Laban, that motivated you to act in a way that was faithless, that was cowardly, that caused you to leave in a way that you shouldn't have. You weren't bold. You didn't show your testimony. You didn't say, hey, God told me to do this. Laban, I must and trust me to provide. Okay? We're going to watch a king in the Old Testament. This is his MO. He's a phenomenal king for the first season, and you'll be surprised when we get to him. He's actually amazing. Okay? And then this sets in for him, and he gets his eyes off of God, puts his eyes on the next up-and-coming king, gets super intimidated, and starts fearing this guy and God bringing him to the forefront of leadership. And all of his decisions are based on, how do I deal with this guy? And his line of sight is like this. He can't see the kingdom. He can't see what God's calling him to do. His name is Saul. Okay, he would have been an amazing king. Literally, hit him in great. Okay, but he was intimidated and fearful of David. This little shepherd boy, right, that couldn't bench press 105 pounds. And God was blessing this kid, right? This redheaded kid from Bethlehem. And there you go. Okay, so we'll get to him in a bit. Okay, but that's his motivating factor. So think about that in your lives. Like when you're making decisions based on fear, step back and go, okay, wait a second. If that is my operating, right, if that's what I'm thinking about now as I'm making this decision, it's probably going to lead to an unhealthy decision. So check that, sit on it for 24 hours, count to 10 as Mark Twain says, or Huck Finn, whoever it was, Tom Sawyer, one of those guys, and take some time to process, because generally that's going to lead to bad decision making, okay? So, all right, so I was afraid, and then he says, hey, the one whom you find with your God shall not live, okay? So I know nothing about these idols that you say I've taken, find whoever took them and kill them. Problem, who has the idols? My wife, which one? Not my least favorite. That would have been very convenient, right? No. That's terrible. But it's his favorite wife, right? So, hey, kill her. Great. Okay? So he's just popped off at the mouth again. Just Jacob, easy, buddy. Okay? But he's trying to prove a point. I know nothing about this. In fact, if you find anybody with these things, you can kill him. So he's distancing himself from the sin, which is, in a sense, right. I don't know what you're talking about. Had no idea that Rachel took him. Okay? 33. Laban went into Jacob's tent, into Leah's tent, and into the tent of her two maids. He did not find them. He went in and out of Leah's tent and entered into Rachel. So he's basically saying, great. And he checks everything. In 34, here's how this rolls out. So again, this tells you a lot about their relationship. So she walks into the tent. Rachel is sitting on a camel's saddle inside of her tent, and she's hid the idol underneath the saddle that she's sitting on. While Laban is running around, this is dad, running around the tent, searching through all of her stuff, right? Where's your diary? Let me look through your drawers. Like, what does it tell you about that dysfunctional relationship? Rachel, do you have them? No, I don't believe you. And keeps looking. You're like, okay. So you can see why they're like, yeah, let's go, right? Dad's a jerk, okay? So this is Rachel's response in verse 35. Rachel, read Rachel's response.
All right. She said to her father, "Let not my lord be angry that I cannot rise before you, for the manner of woman is upon me. So you searched but did not find the household idols."
The manner of woman is upon me, okay? That means exactly what you think it means, okay? She is on her period, okay? And this is not, 2013 where you can drive down to Walgreens and look at your assortment of feminine products, and right, life was a little bit more difficult then. So this was, A, it would have made you unclean, right? So in a Levitical world where this, again, later is going to matter a lot more, it would have made her unclean and unable to worship in that context. But it's also a little bit more difficult to deal with just logistically because they don't have the technology that we have, okay? So she's sitting on her saddle and saying, sorry, Dad, I can't get up. I'm on my period, okay? Now, it's also extremely funny, okay? So God is giving you just a little glimpse right here into his view of idols, right? Where do the idols belong? Underneath a woman having her period. That is the value of that carved piece of wood, stone, gold. That is what it amounts to in your life, right? That's it. That's God saying, that's funny, okay? So I'm telling you, God's got a sense of humor. Paul talks about that in Romans, like, yesterday that was a piece of firewood, you carved it into an action figure, and now you worship it. You're like, really? Like, y'all are dumb. Like, that, you could have burnt that in the fire, and now, explain that to me, right? And that's what God's saying, okay? So there's some Hebrew humor for you, okay? So that's God's view on idols. So Jacob became angry when he consulted with Laban, and Jacob said, what is my transgression? What is my sin that you have hotly pursued me? So obviously, he finds no idol, so he accuses of these things. And now, this is Jacob's response. So here, we're going to get now a 20-year history from Jacob in his interaction with Laban. This is phenomenal. And I want you to see here, this is a very different Jacob that entered into Paddan Aram. This guy has matured. He's not arrived, but we're going to see a maturity in him that God has done. This is phenomenal, okay? 37, you have felt through all my goods. What have you found of all your household goods, meaning nothing, okay? Set it here before my kinsmen and your kinsmen that they may decide between the two of us. So do you have any evidence, Laban? No? Surprise, surprise, okay? These 20 years, verse 38, I have been with you. Your ewes and your female goats have not miscarried, nor have I eaten the rams of your flocks. Okay, what was Jacob's job for Laban? He tended the flocks. He's the shepherd. Okay, what does he say about his role as a shepherd for the last 20 years? I've been stellar. Your lambs have not miscarried. There's nothing missing. I did not eat of your lambs. When I was in the middle of nowhere, freezing in December in Israel or whatever, and it was raining and you had no idea where it was, it's 2 a.m. and I'm hungry, and there's no accountability, nobody that would find out, I didn't eat of your lambs. I'm a man of integrity. I did what I said I would do. I chose from mine or I did something else, but I never stole from you, okay? These 20 years, I have been with you. Your ewes and your female goats have not miscarried. Verse 39, that which was torn of beast, I did not bring to you. I bore the loss myself. You required it of my hand, whether stolen by day or stolen by night. What does he say there? Exactly. If one of yours got injured, and it wasn't even my fault, some bear came in and attacked my flock in the middle of the night, did I come to you and say, hey, sorry, one of your lambs died last night? He said, nope, I took from my own and put it back in your flock. I suffered the loss myself. Like, are you kidding me? How would Laban ever know? How would he even find out? He's got hundreds of sheep and lambs and whatever, right? And goats and what have you, okay? He says, I took that burden myself. So you see this guy, he's standing in front of Laban, and this is the only defense he has, and he points to his character. He says, this is who I have been for you for 20 years, okay? Yeah, partially, and I think this is the last straw. Like, he realizes, man, I blew it. I tried everything in my power to get out of Dodge, like, under the radar, and now it is mano a mano, and this is all I have. So, now, thankfully, this is what he has, because he's a man of character, okay? Keep going to verse 40, Pete, and read that.
Verse 40, there I was, by day that he consumed me, and by the cold by night, and my sheep fled from my eyes.
How is the work of being a shepherd? Hard. It is not an easy job, right? You don't punch a time clock. You don't show up at 8:30, take an hour and a half lunch, you know, hang out in the break room and get off at 4. He's like, no, it's day and night. It's difficult. The sheep don't take time off. They need to be fed. They need to be watered. My job is to make sure that they're cared for 24/7. Tired, hungry, exhausted, sunburnt. I did my job, okay, and didn't complain about it. 21, these 20 years I have been in your house. I served you. We read this verse earlier. For 14 years for your two daughters, 6 more for your flock, and you changed my wages 10 times. What does that mean? Laban gave him 10 raises? You're doing a great job, Jacob. You know, here's another $8 an hour. No. He's basically kept on, you know what? Profit margins are bad. We're gonna need to take a little bit off the top, right? While Laban is just shoving money in his pockets. So 10 times he gets a pay cut. 42, if the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac had not been for me, surely now you would have sent me away empty-handed. God has seen my affliction and the toil of my hands, and he rendered judgment last night. Okay? Jacob finally realized, I got out Jacobed. I got outplayed. I went all in on the poker table. I thought you were bluffing, and you just took all of my money. I got fooled, and you were a jerk to me in the process. And had God not showed up, I would have went home from that table without a buck to pay the valet on the way out. He's like, I'm done. So he realizes Jacob's a different guy. If God does not show up in my life, he has broken me and he's about to get broken again. That's how you would have sent me away, okay? Now watch Laban's response. This is, man, what a dirty jerk.
Laban answered Jacob, "Surely you have sent me away
It probably sounded more like this. The daughters are my daughters, the children are my children, the flocks are my flocks, and all that you see is mine. That's Laban's response. So he says, everything that I've done for you for 20 years, this is what you have accumulated. And he says, that's right, and it's all mine. Like, wow, Laban is just a jerk, right? Doesn't acknowledge, you know what? Absolutely, good job. I was broke when you got here. For the 20 years, and he says it earlier, right? God has blessed me on account of you. I like my lucky rabbit's foot. Now, when push comes to shove, he says, nah, I don't acknowledge any of that. All that is mine. The women, the flocks, the herds, the money, the cars, the house, all of it is mine. So Laban's just a punk, right? So you're seeing his character come to the surface as well. He's a selfish jerk, okay? But he's a selfish jerk that God has used for 20 years to shape Jacob, okay? So now come, let us make a covenant, you and I, and let us be witness between you and me. So Jacob took a stone and set up a pillar. Jacob and his kinsmen, verse 46, had gathered stones. They took the stones and made a heap. So they make this this rock pile. They name it Gilead in verse 47. So again, they're right outside the promised land, across from the Jordan, in the area of Gilead. Okay. And Laban says, this heap is a witness between you and me this day. Okay, so name it Gilead. May the Lord watch in verse 29 or 49 between you and me when we are absent from one another. So let's let God watch over us. So Laban's using all the biblical language he knows how to make this real holy and whatever. If you mistreat my daughters, or if you take wives beside my daughters, although no man is with us in sea, God is witness before you. He says, okay, great. So Laban says, don't mistreat my daughters. Don't take any more for wives. And Laban says, or Jacob says, okay. And then in verse 42, this heap is a witness and a pillar and a witness, and I will not pass by this heap to you for harm, and you will not pass by this heap and this pillar to me for harm. That means this is now a border. You stay south of here, Jacob, and I'll stay north. We're not going to infringe on each other's territory. We're not going to come into one another's place and do each other harm. So we're making a covenant to not basically deal with one another. And we're going to see from this point forward, we don't see this constant travel back to, you know, home to go get wives or whatever. This is it. Okay, so they make an agreement and they say, listen, there's no more interaction. We're going to be okay, but we're just going to kind of agree to disagree and part ways. Okay, so this is it's cordial, right? It doesn't end in a fist fight, thankfully, but they say, listen, we're kind of done with one another. So daughters, love you, mean it. Never see you again. That's kind of basically what he's saying. Okay, the God of Abraham and the God of Nahor, okay, the God of their father judged between us. So Jacob swore by the fear of his father Isaac. So they make this. They offer sacrifice in verse 54. They make kind of the covenant. They spend the night. They eat a meal. And early in the morning, verse 55, Laban arose and kissed his sons and his daughters and blessed them. And Laban departed and returned to his place. Okay? So Jacob is now with his wives, with his kids. He's got his flocks and his herd that God told him to take. So he's got all of his stuff with him. And it's a lot of stuff at this point. And he's finally departed with Laban in peace. Okay? So he has a good night's sleep. They shake hands, you know, man hug a little bit. And then Laban goes his way and he's like, okay. So, now 32, what's on Jacob's mind? You're coming home. You've been gone for 20 years. What are you thinking right now? Who is on Jacob's mind? Esau. What happened 20 years ago when he left town? Esau said, you're dead. I'm going to kill you. So that's the last interaction he's had. So if you're Jacob, you just got out of the frying pan, into the fire. So I solved one problem. I got a much bigger problem than Laban. Laban's a trickster. He's probably not going to lay hands on me. He wanted to, but God intervened. Esau is a whole different ball of wax. Okay, so if you think it just got better, it didn't. Jacob is like, man, you talk about God turning the screws on this guy. He is stressed to the max, right? So, and you'll see that. God knows that. And he's with Laban, or with Jacob, right where he's at. Okay, 32. Let's watch how this unfolds. Yes?
Going back to the age thing. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
40 when you got married. I don't know if it's chronological though.
Yeah, so they are older. Sorry, thank you. So put some more ages on that. So if they're 40 there, 20 years, so Jacob's returning at, gosh, what is he, 60 then? Okay, so there you go. Nice find. Good job. All right. So we got a 60-year-old coming back, which is gonna put new context on chapter we're about to read, okay? So, 32:1, Jacob went on his way, and the angels met him, okay? When he saw this camp, he says it's God's camp, okay? It's called Mahanaim, so he's, again, same place, same area, just east of the Jordan River, basically directly in between the Sea of Galilee and the Dead Sea, that area, okay? And he's getting ready to come back into the land. He's got to cross the Jordan River and get in there, okay? Verse 3, read that.
And Jacob sent messengers before him to Esau, his brother, in the land of Seir, the country of Edom, instructing them, thus you shall say to my lord Esau, thus says your servant Jacob, I have sojourned with Laban and stayed until now. I have oxen, donkeys, flocks, male servants, and female servants. I have sent to tell my lord in order that I may find favor in your sight.
What is Jacob doing? Absolutely, right? Is he going? Oh no, right? I'm going to send servants, right? You guys are expendable. I will send you, and you go tell Esau, dude, I am loaded, and I've got a blank check with your name on it. Okay, that's basically what he does. Okay, now here's the report he gets back, right? Six, the messengers leave, and now they return. Jacob, keep going.
And the messengers returned to Jacob, saying, we came to your brother Esau, and he is coming to meet you, and there are 400 men with him.
Okay, right in your margins right there, this is where Jacob wets his pants. That is the last thing that Jacob wanted to hear. Oh, yeah, we talked to him. What did he say? He's coming. Oh, good. With 400 men. Why would you be bringing 400 men? You're not coming to say hi, right? Jacob is screwed. That is where he's at. So he's coming. He's coming to fight. He's bringing all his men. He's not bringing donkeys and sheep. And hey, this is my wife, you know, one. This is wife two. This is my third and fourth wives, Jacob. I just want to introduce. He's bringing 400 fighting men. So Jacob's like, oh, God, right? This is his worst nightmare, right? I tried to appease him. I held up a blank check to him, and he said, no, thanks. I don't want your money. I want you dead. I want to, you know, boil your, I don't know what you want to do with him. But in Jacob's mind, you can imagine where he's at right now. He is just panicked, okay? Verse 7, Jacob was greatly afraid. Now, how did he feel about Laban? Afraid. How does he feel about Esau? Greatly afraid, right? Wet your pants afraid. Greatly afraid and distressed. And he divided the people who were with him, the flocks and the herds and the camels, into two companies. This is how bad it is, okay? He says to himself in verse 8, if Esau comes to one company and attacks it, then one company which is left will escape. So I'm gonna play the stock market as best I know how. I'm going to divide everything in half, okay? One of us is all going to die. He's going to come and overtake one of our camps, and all of us are going to die. Okay, the other half, whoever that is, hopefully will survive. That's his strategy. Like, he just realizes, I got nothing, right? I don't have fighting men. I got sheep and donkeys and wives and babies, right? This is bad, okay? So, Jacob now, verse 9, finally, this is where it takes to get him. Yes, Layla. That is solid advice from Layla Granada right there. Everybody write that down. God more important than mama. I'm sorry.
How is that not even discussed? Like, don't you think he would be asking God, or when God told him, go back home?
Yeah.
Don't you think that would be in his thoughts? Like, my mom hasn't told me.
It's yeah. Now he's. I think he's grown up. He's his own man. And God's told him, so he's like, okay, you know. So, and I think Jacob's ready to get out of there. So he's looking for any reason to. Okay, good. Laban's not happy. He never sees his mom alive. She's going to die before he gets home. So it's, again, it's a rough story. Okay. So there'll be tears. So yeah, bad deal. Okay. So Jacob has now divided his things in half. And I want you to notice God got him in a spot of difficulty last chapter. God is getting him here for a reason. And this is the reason, verse 9.
For with only my staff I crossed this Jordan, and now I have become two camps. Please deliver me from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him, that he may come and attack me, the mothers with the children.
So what is Jacob doing right now? Physically, I mean, what is he doing? He's praying. When's the last time you've seen Jacob pray? 20 years ago in Bethel, when he said, hey, vending machine God, I need some stuff from you. Where is he now? He's at a whole different spot. He is praying out of fear for his life. I am not. You see the difference in his prayer? I am not worthy of the. Jacob's Bible says steadfast love, loving kindness. It's the word hesed. It's the most powerful word in our Old Testament for unmerited favor. I'm not worthy of your grace is what God is, what Jacob's telling to God. I am hosed. I am not a place to bargain. I am not trying to make deals. I am fearful for my life. God, please come through. You see where God's put him? Like, this is where God wants him. What does he say he fears right now? Esau, right? He tells God that. I am greatly afraid, and that fear is motivating me to pray. And that's exactly where God wants him. Okay? Jacob, congratulations. This is called the end of your rope, and you no longer can out-Jacob the people around you to get what you want. You're done, and I have stripped you of everything, and now you have to turn to me. And God says, game on. Now I can deal with you. Now I can accomplish the purposes that I need to in your life. Okay? You told me, verse 12, God, I will surely prosper you and make your descendants as the sand of the sea, which is too great to be numbered. And again, he reminds God, Lord, you promised me these things. You've said you would take care of me. Boy, it sure doesn't look like it right now. I need you to show up. Okay, so again, God is so predictable in this that he gets his servants in situations like these, forces them to pray, gets them at the end of the rope where you can do absolutely nothing and says, now I will come through for you. Okay, but he makes him spend a night by himself and just scared. Okay, so let's keep picking up in verse 13.
So he stayed there that night, and from what he had with him, he took a present for his brother Esau: 200 female goats and 20 male goats, 200 ewes and 20 rams, 30 milking camels and their calves, 40 cows and 10 bulls, 20 female donkeys and 10 male donkeys.
I mean, can we just say that's a lot? Right? That's a lot. That's a ton of stuff, okay? So much so, he delivered him into the hand of his servants and says, verse 16, pass on before me and put a space between the droves, okay? He commanded the one in the front saying, when my brother Esau meets you and asks you saying, to whom do you belong and where are you going and who do these animals belong? Then you'll say, these belong, in verse 18, to your servant Jacob, and it is a present to you, my lord Esau, and behold, he is behind us. And he's going to say, bring them in droves, okay? Here come the sheep. Here come the second thing of sheep. Here come the oxen. And it's like Hanukkah. Gift. And it's not just Christmas. It's day after day after of blessing. That's the idea. So he is giving everything he has to appease Esau, okay? One after the other, okay? And Jacob, in verse 18, he sends them on. And where is he going to be? End of verse 18. In the back. Way to go, leader. Send everybody else first, and you stay in the back. Now, God has a purpose in this, okay? Let's see. So he tells them, that's how you're going to do it. Tell them it's a gift. Hopefully then, in verse 20, this is his hope. Afterward, I will see his face. Perhaps he will accept me. This is all I got, okay? This is my ace in the hole. I'm going to give it all. I'm praying like crazy. God, you need to come through. I will give away everything I own at this point just to save my neck, okay? So the present passed on before him. He himself, 21, camped that night in the camp. He arose the same night, took his two wives, his two maids, and his 11 children, and crossed the ford of the Jacob, or the Jabbok, so which is, that's a river that flows east-west into the Jordan, okay? He took all that he had and sent them across the stream. Verse 24, then Jacob was left alone. When is the last time that we've seen Jacob alone? 20 years ago in Bethel. And what happened 20 years ago in Bethel? God showed up, right? 24, Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until daybreak. Who is this guy, and why is God giving you like WWF right now? I don't know, okay? There's a wrestling match that occurs, and now we're going to get some insight into what's going on. 25, pick up there. Okay, so there's this wrestling match that occurs all night long, okay? And this is a picture of prayer, okay? He is the angel of the Lord, okay? And Jacob is so persistent in wrestling with this guy, he says he doesn't prevail against Jacob, that he takes his finger and touches his hip and blows his hip out of socket. There is not a stronger joint in your body than your hip. It's like a ball and socket joint. I mean, it is nigh unto impossible to dislocate, okay? He does it with his finger. And blows his hip out of joint, okay? That does not happen, okay? Blows his hip out of joint, dislocates it. The 26, he still persists. The angel of the Lord says, let me go, for the dawn is breaking. But he said, I will not let you go until you bless me. Okay, so Jacob is, again, this picture of prayer. He's begging this man to bless him, to grant him peace from what's coming. Okay, and he says to Jacob in verse 27, what is your name? Okay, why is that significant that this guy would be asking Jacob's name? What's coming? He's about to get renamed, which means who is this guy? He's not just some dude, right? He has the authority to change names, which means he has ownership over Jacob. He says, what is your name? Jacob says, Jacob. And he says, your name shall no longer be Jacob, but Israel. What does Israel mean? What's El mean? El is God. Beth El is God. The beginning of that means strives with. Your name is strives with God, Israel. Okay? For you have striven with God and with men and have prevailed. So what does the angel of the Lord think about this wrestling match? How did Jacob do? Well done. You wrestled with me. You would not let me go. I could have killed you. I could have won this in a second. I blew out your hip with my finger. I wasn't mismatched in this. So just so we're clear, right? I had the upper hand the whole time, but I'm allowing you to wrestle with me, and you've done a great job. So he renames him. And then Jacob in 29 asks a question.
Then Jacob asked him, please tell me your name. But he said, why is it that you ask my name?
Like, bro, you don't get that. You don't get my name, right? Good job, little boy, right? So the idea is, we see Samson ask of that, or at least his dad Manoah, and he says, my name is too wonderful for you, right? He says, you can't know my name. So you get the idea that, no, I name you. You don't know, name me. This is a one-way deal. You can't even know my name, okay? He gets blessed. Verse 30, Jacob named the place Peniel, and he said, I have seen the face of God, and yet my life has been preserved. So you think that place has some meaning for him, right? I have seen God's face. I wrestled with God, and I am not dead. Isn't that fascinating? Everybody that meets God, that's the response. I didn't die. Like, you got to think, that's a pretty significant interaction. He's trying to get a blessing. He's got Esau in his brain. I'm about to die. And I think the picture is, in a physical way, him praying and being persistent in prayer, saying, I need you to bless me. I need you to promise me that you're going to take care of me like you did 20 years ago. I need you to reassure me that you're going to allow my seed to continue, and these promises that you gave me are not dead. So that's what he's begging for. So he's just scared out of his mind. I think to agree, yes. I mean, there are physically two people wrestling.
Can you just, like, walk up and
turn the headlock? That's a great question. I don't know. I don't know how that worked. But I think the picture of it is, yeah, so much for hospitality, right? Yeah. The angel of the Lord would not have been a very good elder, apparently. Or we was really good at conflict resolution, one of the two. So, headlock.
When I read this, he's scared, and then he's like telling God, what happened to all these promises?
Yeah.
So it's almost like you can't sleep, and then you find himself.
Yeah.
Like in the wilderness, like, yeah.
Yep. I mean, you guys have been there in those moments, you realize, man, this is real. This is the mortgage, this is my wife, this is food, this is shelter, this is not, you know, the extras in life. This is like what I need to live, and if you don't provide, I'm dead. And that's where he's got him.
So when it says that the man saw that he didn't prevail against Jacob, it makes it sound like he's trying to not bless him?
I think he's waiting for Jacob to give up. Like, how long are you going to fight? How much fight do you have? How desperate are you? You got 30 minutes in you? That's a long time. If you've ever wrestled, by the way, there is nothing more exhausting, right? There was one person in our high school that our coaches were fearful of, our football coaches, and that was the wrestling coach, because those guys are freaking nut jobs, right? They are strong, they are tough, they're relentless, and that's because it's an exhausting sport. So you've got Jacob physically doing something that's absolutely exhausting, and he will not relent. So I think that's the picture of, man, I want to bless you, but I want to see how bad you want this. How hard are you willing to, how done are you? Is there still something left in your pocket, Jacob, that you want to play? Oh, I got another option. It's like, no, I'm done. I got nothing. So I think that's the picture. So, make sense? All right.
When we get that from later, when he's saying, let me go, and he says, I will not let you go unless you bless me, it's like, you're all I've got.
Uh-huh.
So if I die wrestling with you, great. Yeah. I'm going to die anyway.
Yeah. And the reality is, that's our whole life. That's where we're at. There's a couple times in life where God says, now I'm going to show you that. I am all you got. And all these things that you lean on, that you trust in, and that you think you have, I can take them out tomorrow. And if they're blessings, then great, right? Enjoy them, that's fine. But there are times where God shows us that just to remind us, you're not in control. You have control of nothing. I'm in control. So and sometimes we need to learn that lesson. There's other times we just need to remember it so we don't have to go through it again. So Jacob will not have to learn this lesson again, ever. He goes, got it. I took that right here and not forget it. The latter. I think it's the angel of the Lord.
In flesh, if they were able to wrestle. And it, previously, when the angel of the Lord has been there, was he in flesh as well?
Yeah, with Abraham, when he shows up with the Sodom and Gomorrah piece, he is a physical being. When we see him later with Manoah, he is a physical being. So he takes on some type of appearance of a man, right? Somehow different than what Jesus does. Like the incarnation is still somehow different.
So this is the same person as before that you said is like the pre-incarnate Christ.
This is the pre-incarnate Christ, yes. There's something different about how he incarnates, whether it's an angelic form that is like, oh, that's not a man, but it's, okay. Right? I don't know, but it's different. The incarnation is unique and
right.
And only.
Exactly.
So, again, I don't know exactly what it looked like, but it wasn't like he's talking to a tree or a spirit. I mean, he's physically wrestling with somebody. So, I don't. And godly people say Mike's an idiot, and that's not. He's reading too much into it. There's a lot of people in the Old Testament that say, look, he never shows up. Every time that you read angel, it's an angel. It's not. There's no difference between a and the angel of the Lord. No, I'm looking at the entirety of Scripture and saying, this guy consistently shows up in this way. It seems to still be that guy. And when he shows up, he continues like this. He's worshipped. He's prayed to. This is different than just an angel. Angels in other points say, uh-uh, don't worship me. So I'm piecing together all that we know about. I'm doing systematic theology here. Great observation. Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay? All right.
This passage makes me think of like Luke 11 where it's talking about prayer and keep knocking on that neighbor's door until you get an answer. Sometimes the answer is just being persistent.
Yeah. 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 And that's what gets honored here is persistence, right? It's not quality. It's persistence, right? It's the widow that's like, I'm going to bug that judge until you drive him crazy and he gives me what I want. And that's an ungodly judge. God says, how much more, right? So, yeah, that's a great picture. So it's a great reminder. It's hard, but it's a good reminder, okay? So Jacob has his thigh blown out. Seeing the face of God, I persevered, or haven't been killed at least. 31, the sun rose upon him just as he crossed over Penuel, and he was limping on his thigh. That's a great reminder. What is Jacob left with for the rest of his life? He's got a physical wound, right? A reminder of, so every time he walked, every other step was a reminder of God's dealing with him. Ladies, I've heard it said, when you choose a husband, you find a guy with a limp that has interacted with God to the degree that it has affected his life. You're like, man, that's just a good picture of that's what we all want, right? So therefore this day, sons of Israel, do not eat that part of the hip because of their belief, according to here, of what happened here, okay? Now, 33, Here it comes. Here's the climax of the story, okay? Jacob lifted his eyes and looked, and behold, Esau was coming, 400 men with him. He divided the children, Leah and Rachel, into two, and his two maids. So, guy said he was coming. He's got 400 men. He's coming. He's wrestled with God. God said, good for you. You persevered. He still doesn't know how Esau's going to respond, okay? He put the two maids and their children in front, and Leah and her children next, and Rachel at the back. And so he puts his favorite at the back. But watch what Jacob does. Verse 3.
He himself went on before them.
Where? Before. Where was he a chapter ago? Hiding in the back, right, with Rachel. Y'all go first. He says, no, I'll lead the way. Do you see a difference in Jacob? Okay, I need to take this man to man. God has done something with him, so he walks into it confident that God's going to do what he's going to do, and if he doesn't, he's still leading like a man. So, man, I like Jacob. You see a godliness in him that we didn't see 20 years ago, and after this interaction, this guy has changed, okay? Bows down to the ground 7 times until he came near to his brother Esau. So what does he do? Dude, he's on his face. I mean, when you talk about bowing down, you're on your face, you get up, you're on your face, you get 7 times, right, as Esau's coming. He's like, you know, so again, he still doesn't know. And here it is in verse 4. This is how it all goes down.
But Esau ran to meet him and embraced him and fell on his neck and kissed him, and they went.
How about that, right? This is one of the, there's a couple stories in Genesis that are just that powerful. This is one, and the story with Joseph and his brothers is equally, if not more, powerful. But here you have this guy, this pagan, right, who has been stewing for 20 years, at least Jacob thinks, and he thinks the next thing he's going to feel is a machete on his head. And Jacob is embraced by his brother, who this, right, the man's man, Bear Grylls, who weeps with him to see his brother again. He gets the exact opposite reaction that he'd expected. So does God show up? God shows up, right? And these two are now joined again. They weep together. It's just a really, really cool picture of forgiveness from the non-Christian, which is, again, super powerful, okay? He lifted up his eyes, saw the women and the children, and said, who are these with you? Jacob says, these are the children that God has graciously given your servant. The maids came by with their children, and they bowed. Leah and her children, they bowed. Joseph came with Rachel, and they bowed. So he now, okay, we're good. Here's my family, right? Here's Leah and my other wife, Rachel, and there's my kids, and here's all 12 of them. And so it's this really, really cool picture of them reuniting and having a right relationship. And kudos to Esau, right? Here's a guy that somehow God has worked in this guy's life behind the scenes, right? We don't get the story of Esau. We don't know what happened with him, but somehow that bitter anger grudge that he held against his brother, it was gone. And 20 years later, what he cared about was, man, is my brother alive? Is he okay? I don't want your gifts. I don't want your stuff. I want you back. Okay. So powerful picture. Okay. And 8 and following, next week we'll get into kind of the rest of the story and how he gets back into the land. But Jacob's stress is finally alleviated. So let's pause there and we'll pick up next week.